The Heart of Happy Hollow, a collection of stories by Paul Lawrence Dunbar. A Matter of Doctrine. There was great excitement in Miltonville over the advent of a most eloquent and convincing minister from the North. The beauty about the Reverend Thaddeus Warwick was that he was purely and simply a man of the doctrine. He had no emotions. His sermons were never matters of feeling. But he insisted so strongly upon the constant presentation of the tenets of his creed that his presence in a town was always marked by the enthusiasm and joy of religious disputation. The Reverend Jasper Hayward, colored, was a man quite of another stripe. With him, it was not so much what a man held as what he felt. The difference in their characteristics, however, did not prevent him from attending Dr. Warwick's series of sermons, where, from the vantage point of the gallery, he drank in, without assimilating, that divine's words of wisdom. Especially was he edified on the night that his white brother held forth upon the doctrine of predestination. It was not that he understood it at all, but that it sounded well, and the words had a rich ring as he champed over them again and again. Mr. Hayward was a man for the time, and knew that his congregation desired something new, and, if he could supply it, he was willing to take lessons even from a white co-worker who had neither de spirit nor de fire, because, as he was prone to admit to himself, dey was something in de understanding. He had no idea what plagiarism is, and without a single thought of wrong, he intended to reproduce for his people the religious wisdom which he acquired at the white church. He was an innocent beggar, going to the doors of the well-provided for cold spiritual victuals to warm over for his own family. And it would not be plagiarism either, for this very warming-over process would save it from that and make his own whatever he brought. He would season with the pepper of his homely wit, sprinkle it with the salt of his homemade philosophy, then, hot with the fire of his crude eloquence, serve to his people a dish his very own. But to the true purveyor of original dishes, it is never pleasant to know that someone else holds the secret of the groundwork of his invention. It was then something of a shock to the Reverend Mr. Hayward to be accosted by Isaac Middleton, one of his members, just as he was leaving the gallery on the night of this most edifying of sermons. Isaac laid a hand upon his shoulder and smiled at him benevolently. "How do, Brother Hayward?" he said. "You been sitting under de drippings of de gospel, too?"
"Yes. I has been listening to de words of my fellow laborer in de vineyard of de Lord," replied the preacher with some dignity, for he saw vanishing the vision of his own glory in a revivified sermon on predestination. Isaac linked his arm familiarly in his pastor's as they went out upon the street.
"Well, what do you think about preordination and foredestination anyhow?"
"It certainly has been presented to us in a powerful light this evening."
"Well, sir, it opened my eyes. I do know when I has heard a sermon that done my soul mo' good."
"It was a upliftin' episode."
"Seem like, codin' to de way de brother elucidated de matter tonight, de everything done sought out and cut and dried for us. Well, dat's gwine to help me lots."
"De gospel is allers a help."
But not allers in dis way. You see, I ain't a educated man like you, Brother Hayward."
"We can all have de same vantages," the preacher condescended. "But what I feels, and what I understands. The scripture tells us to get understanding."
"Well, that's what I's been a-doing tonight. I's been a-doubting and a-doubting, a-fooling around and a-wandering, but now I understand."
"'Splain yourself, Brother Middleton," said the preacher.
"Well, sir, I will to you. You knows Miss Sally Briggs, huh? What say?"
The Reverend Hayward had given a half-discernible start, and an explanation had fallen from his lips.
"What say?" repeated his companion.
"I knows de sister very well, she been a member of my flock."
"Well, I've been gwine in company with dat woman for de longest time. You ain't never tasted none of her cookin', has you?"
"I has experienced de sister's performances in dat line. She is the cookinest woman I ever seed in all my life, but howsomever, I've been gwine all this time, and I ain't never said a word. I never could get clean away from hum without some draw me back, and I didn't know what it was."
The preacher was restless.
"It was dis way, Brother Hayward. I was allers lingering on de brink, fearful to launch away, but now I's a-gwine to launch, case dat all dis time tain't been nothing but foredestination that's been a-holding me on."
"Ahem," said the minister,
We must not be in too big a hurry to put our human weaknesses upon some divine cause.
Oh, I ain't a-doin' dat, though. I ain't a-sputin' dat de lady is mos' uncommon fine-lookin' person.
I has only seed her with the eye of de spirit, was the virtuous answer. And to dat eye, all things that are good are beautiful.
Yes, sir. And looking with the cooking eye, it seem like I des foe destined for to marry dat woman.
You say you ain't axed, sir, yet?
Oh, not yet, but I's gwon to as soon as ever I gets the chance now.
Uh-huh,
said the preacher, and he began to hasten his steps homeward.
Seems like you're in a powerful hurry tonight,
said his companion, with some difficulty accommodating his own step to the preacher's masterly strides. He was a short man, and his pastor was tall and gaunt.
I have something on my mind, Brother Middleton, that I want to thrash out tonight in the solitude of my own chamber,
was the solemn reply.
Well, I'm gwine keep along with you and poster you with my chatter, Brother Haywood.
And at the next corner, Isaac Middleton turned off and went his way with a cheery, "So long,
may the Lord set with you in your meditations."
"So long,"
said his pastor hastily. Then he did what would be strange in any man, but seemed stranger in so virtuous a minister. He checked his hasty pace and, after furtively watching Middleton out of sight, turned and retraced his steps in a direction exactly opposite to the one in which he had been going, and toward the cottage of the very Sister Griggs, concerning whose charms the minister's parishioner had held forth. It was late, but the pastor knew that the woman whom he sought was industrious and often worked late, and with ever-increasing eagerness he hurried on. He was fully rewarded for his perseverance when the light from the window of his intended hostess gleamed upon him, and when she stood in the full glow of it as the door opened in answer to his knock.
"La, Brother Haywood, if it ain't you, howdy, come in."
"Howdy, howdy, Sister Griggs. How you come on?"
"Oh, I's des tolerable,"
industriously dusting a chair.
"How's your Seth?"
"I's right smart, thank you, ma'am."
"Why, Brother Haywood, ain't you lost down in this part of the town?"
"No, indeed, Sister Griggs. The shepherd ain't never lost, nor why there's any of the flock."
Then looking round the room at the piles of ironed clothes, he added,
"You certainly is a industrious woman."
"I was des about finishing up some ironing I had for the white folks,"
smiled Sister Griggs, taking down her ironing board and resting it in the corner.
"Allus, when I gets through my work at nights, I's pretty well tired out and has to eat a snack. Sit by, Brother Haywood, while I fixes us a bite."
"Law, sister, it don't scarcely seem right for me to be a-comin' in here letting you fix for me at this time of night, and you mighty nigh tuck it out, too."
"Tish, Brother Haywood, 'tain't no harder looking out for the two than it is looking out for the one."
Haywood flashed a quick upward glance at his hostess's face, and then repeated slowly,
"Yes'm, that certainly is the truth. I ain't never thought of that before. It ain't no harder looking out for two than it is for one."
And though he was usually an incessant talker, he lapsed into a brown study. Be it known that Reverend Mr. Haywood was a man of a very level head, and that his bachelorhood was a matter of economy. He had long considered matrimony in the light of a most desirable estate, but one which he feared to embrace until the rewards for his labors began looking up a little better. But now the matter was being presented to him in an entirely different light.
"It ain't no harder looking out for the two than for the one. Might that not be the truth after all?"
One had to have food. It would take very little more to do for two. One had to have a home to live in. The same house would shelter two. One had to wear clothes. Well, now, there came the rub. But he thought of donation parties and smiled. Instead of being an extravagance, might not this union of two beings be an economy? Somebody to cook the food, somebody to keep the house, and somebody to mend the clothes. His reverie was broken in upon by Sally Griggs' voice.
"It do seem like you mighty deep in thought this evening, Brother Haywood. I done spoke to you twice it."
"Excuse me, Sister Griggs. My mind has been mighty deeply absorbed in a little matter of doctrine. What you say to me?"
I say, set up to the table and have a bite to eat. Tain't much, but sich as I have, you know what the parcel said."
The preacher's eyes glistened as they took in the well-filled board. There was fervor in the blessing which he asked that made amends for its brevity. Then he fell to. Isaac Middleton was right. This woman was a genius among cooks. Isaac Middleton was also wrong. He, a layman, had no right to raise his eyes to her. She was the prize of the elect, not the quarry of any chance pursuer. As he ate and talked, his admiration for Sally grew, as did his indignation at Middleton's presumption. Meanwhile, the fair one plied him with delicacies and paid deferential attention whenever he opened his mouth to give vent to an opinion. An admirable wife she would make indeed. At last, supper was over, and his chair pushed back from the table. With a long sigh of content, he stretched his long legs, tilted back, and said,
"Well, you done settled de case as fur as I's concerned."
"What dat, Brother Haywood?" she asked.
"Well, I dunno as I's quite prepared to tell you yet."
"Here now, don't you remember old Miss Eve? 'Tain't never right to get a lady's curiosity, Riz."
"Oh, never mind. I ain't gwine to keep your curiosity up long. You see, Sister Griggs, you done lucidated one pint to me this night that makes it plumb needful for me to speak."
She was looking at him with wide-open eyes of expectation.
"You made the remark tonight that it ain't no harder looking out after two than one."
"Oh, Brother Haywood."
"Sister Sally, I recognizes that, and I want to know if you won't let me look out after we two. Will you marry me?"
She picked nervously at her apron, and her eyes sought the floor modestly as she answered,
"Why, Brother Haywood, I ain't fitten for no such educated man as you. Supposin' you get to be a Poseidon elder and bishop or something other, what'd I be?"
He waved his hand magnanimously.
"Sister Griggs, Sally, whatever high place I may be foredestined to, I shall take my wife up with me."
This was enough, and with her hearty yes, the Reverend Mr. Haywood had Sister Sally close in his clerical arms. They were not through their mutual felicitations, which were indeed so enthusiastic as to drown the sound of a knocking at the door and the ominous scraping of feet when the door opened to admit Isaac Middleton, just as the preacher was imprinting a very dedicated kiss upon his fiancée's cheek.
"Wah! Wah!"
exclaimed Middleton. The preacher turned.
"That you, Isaac?"
he said complacently.
"You must excuse our appearance. We des gone engaged."
The fair Sally blushed unseen.
"What?"
cried Isaac.
"Engaged after what I told you tonight?"
His face was a thundercloud.
"Yes, sir. And is that the way you stand up for foredestination?"
This time it was the preacher's turn to darken angrily as he replied,
"Look a-here, Ike Middleton, all I got to say to you is that whenever a lady cook to please me like this lady do, and whenever I love one like I love her, and she seems to love me back, I's a-gwine to pop the question to her. Foedestination or no foedestination, so dare."
The moment was pregnant with tragic possibilities. The lady still stood with bowed head, but her hand had stolen into her minister's. Isaac paused, and the situation overwhelmed him. Crushed with anger and defeat, he turned toward the door. On the threshold, he paused again to say,
"Well, all I got to say to you, Haywood, don't you never talk to me no more nothing about doctrine."
The end of A Matter of Doctrine, a short story by Paul Lawrence Dunbar. Read by Rick Kistner for Let to Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.